Hi, welcome to Pod Geospatial. I'm Adam Simmons. We're at the GEON 2023 Symposium in St. Louis, Missouri. I have the pleasure of being at the NRO booth, where this gentleman is going to get into a little bit of the history of the community as a whole. Some of the things that you're going to talk about go back a long time, the beginning of perhaps even imagery and satellites, right? But before we do, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, or just briefly introduce yourself, and we'll get into it.
My name is Mike. I'm the historian at the NRO. I've been here about 8 years. I've been an agency employee for 33 years now, and came over to the NRO about 8 years ago to join the history department, and I've been there ever since.
Awesome. Well, let's get right into it. What do we have here?
Sure. Here we have some artifacts from NRO's history, and on the top we have a hook from the very first Discover 14 mission, which was the first time that film was ever retrieved from outer space.
Was that actually one of the hooks that we used?
That is actually one of the hooks. The way the film return systems worked back then was that the satellites would take the film, would take the images, drop them back into the atmosphere, release a parachute, and then Air Force aircraft would fly by and recover the chutes in midair. And they trailed out a wire behind them with three or four hooks on it, and that was actually one of the hooks from the very first mission.
Incredible.
And that was before the NRO even existed.
And I'm sure that was a lot of skill for those pilots back then.
They practiced forever. Yeah. They did hundreds of practice missions and took them years of practice before they even started trying to catch them.
Excellent. So what do we have next?
Here's a model of a Corona 4 satellite. This was the first dual film return system for the Corona. They, instead of one return bucket, they had two, and it allowed us to extend the missions even further from like 1 or 2 days to multiple 5-6 days.
And how long was Corona in orbit?
Corona operated between 1960 and 1972. They flew 148 missions, and we retrieved 156 film return capsules containing over 2 million feet of film.
And once again, one of the first imagery satellite, correct?
Yes, it was. It was the very first imagery satellite in 1960. It was not the first intelligence satellite. This is one thing that a lot of people missed. That was the Grab down there, which flew about a month and a half before Corona.
Okay. Well, since you pointed that one out, we'll skip right all the way to the bottom initially, right?
Sure. The Grab satellite stands for Galactic Radiation and Background. That was the unclassified mission for the system. Basically, the Air Force said that they would send up a satellite to test atmospheric conditions, things like this, radiation levels. But the secret mission of the Grab was to go by and catalog Russian air defense radars to collect their air defense signals as they were going by. And that flew two months after Gary Powers was shot down and a month and a half before Corona flew. So it was the very first intelligence satellite in world history.
Okay, and going back up to the top, Ari, which one?
Well, this one here, Poppy. That's just a follow-on to the Grab. There was another successful mission. It flew seven missions. Ended up in 1973, I believe, 73 or 74, early 70s. But they had seven successful missions, and there was just a follow-on to Grab, and that's basically most of the SIGINT history that we discuss, because most SIGINT history is still classified.
And no worries, that's when we switch to the commercial side, right?
Yeah,
it's all good.
Almost. Here we have a parachute piece, which was actually part of the Corona program. The very first practice missions out in Hawaii started in 1958. They started practicing in California at Vandenberg Air Force Base, and then they moved to Hawaii, and that was a big step because they initially started off with C-113 aircraft, which were dual-engine aircraft. You're not supposed to fly two-engine aircraft over water, but they had to get them to Hawaii somehow, so they actually flew them out to Hawaii.
So why couldn't they fly two engines?
Well, if you have a two-engine aircraft and one of the engines goes down, you're not going to make it to Hawaii with just one single engine.
Fair.
So that was one of the reasons why it was very, very sketchy right at the beginning.
Okay.
And they flew those for about a year before they got up to C-130s aircraft were brought into service.
And the last piece we have down there is the film canister.
This is a film canister from the Corona program. And,
yeah.
basically, the whole film return history of of the NRO was you had satellites flying in space, but they had to get the film back somehow. So they would put them in, drop the film, it would come down, release the parachute and aircraft, and fly by and catch them. But it was a very time-consuming process. It took several days, sometimes up to weeks, before the film would be brought down into the atmosphere and collected. Then it would have to get flown to Rochester, New York, to get processed by Kodak, and then flown down to Washington, D.C. before we could ever see the film. So we took up to 3 weeks before we would actually see the film that was being collected. And by that time, a lot of stuff had already happened.
And I know
That was why we eventually went into electro-optical imagery, the KH-11 Canon in 1976.
But that's a similar process, sending the film up to Kodak or having similar processing as the U-2, as we see in the Smithsonian, and a very similar canister, too.
Exactly the same.
And then, obviously, the director of NGA announced the whole film processing and what it took to bring the wet film into digitization in the recently, as a lot of that film from years and years ago degraded over the years, right? So once again, thank you very much for telling us the history of the artifacts here, an amazing history we have in the industry. It highlights a lot of where we came from and how far the progress has been since. Right?
One interesting aspect about the film return system that people don't know about is that all of the processing for the film, hundreds of thousands of feet of film, there's a lot of chemicals involved. And Kodak actually developed a microorganism that actually fed off of the waste products from the film processing. And so they saved millions and millions of gallons of waste products that would have been dumped into the environment or something like that. So they were able to save all that information. And the only thing left over from that was sludge that could be incinerated in water.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, sir, and thank you for your time sharing with us.
My pleasure.
Okay, I'm Adam Simmons with Project Geospatial. We'll talk to everybody next time.